Hey, good afternoon, and welcome back from lunch. Are you awake?
Yes.
Okay, and you know, this was a gift from a friend, and I decided that it needed to grace the stage and help visually call your attention to what I'm about to talk about. I will take off the hat for now. So as Chris mentioned, I am a security strategist with Microsoft. A little bit about my background is I came to Microsoft from the outside, as most of us have. Most of us didn't grow up our professional careers here. And I came about 6.5 years ago. I remember sitting in new employee orientation and staring at the Microsoft logo on the podium and almost bolting for the door. I was so scared. What have I done? What have I done? You know, I was a Linux developer at a certain point in my career. And don't worry about that. That doesn't make me, you know, intrinsically hostile to the Microsoft environment. It actually builds empathy. And one of the things I'm going to be talking about today in the context of our strategic programs, our defensive programs, and our bounty programs is about the empathy that we need to build with each other, with our partners, with the security ecosystem, the hacker ecosystem, and ways in which we can build that empathy with each other, build that trust, to be able to have positive security outcomes and tip the balance in favor of defenders. As a pen tester, a lot of you who have met with some of our internal security teams or met with external pen testers, how many of you have ever had them sort of call your baby ugly? Right? So if one comes from a diverse background, it's often important to have that empathy to be able to land your message. And the way that I would usually put it as a pen tester is your baby's not ugly, it's just got some really interesting features. So I'm going to talk to you today about some of the history of our outreach programs and some of the history of Microsoft's security approach. I wasn't here for the trustworthy computing memo that Bill Gates wrote back in 2002. How many of you were? All right, so there are a few long timers in the audience, and that's fantastic. So you've been able to watch the entire transformation of Microsoft security posture, how we dealt with security as a company, and you were there for that historic moment when Bill Gates did something unprecedented. To this day, he stopped all the developers from developing a single other line of code until they got some security training, until they got some empathy with the fact that our customers at the time were under attack. Do you remember? That was the age of the great worms. That was the age where it was very difficult to trust whether or not deploying Windows systems in your environment was going to be a safe thing for you to do as a business, as a consumer. And so this was a major turning point for us. You know, we've had other important milestones in the history of Microsoft, such as First Update Tuesday. We call it Update Tuesday. The outside world calls it Black Tuesday. It's a little empathy building there. It's for their own good. They want to be secure, and yet it's sometimes a painful experience for them to deploy what we work hard to fix. The security development lifecycle was another major milestone in terms of the company turning around what it did in terms of proactive security. To this day, this company with its thousands and thousands of developers, it's the biggest company that deploys an ongoing security strategy that involves building security in from the ground up, looking at it from the earliest stages of code or of design, and building it in throughout, such that you're reducing and mitigating the number and the types of severity of issues that come out when the code is actually released. Afterwards, of course, there are still vulnerabilities remaining, because as long as humans write code, we will write code that contains some security issues. So that's where the hacker community comes in. They are great at pointing out where we might have missed something. They are great at looking at the code, looking at the products and the services through a lens that maybe we'll reveal something that we missed. So in terms of researcher engagement, about 10 years ago, some of the senior members of Trustworthy Computing actually traveled to Poland to go meet the folks that were part of a hacking crew called Last Stage of Delirium, or the LSD crew, and went to recruit them to come work at Microsoft. They didn't create the blaster worm, but they found the underlying vulnerabilities that led to that worm's creation. They still work here to this day, helping to secure our products. They are among you. The Blue Hat briefings, where you are right now, began in 2005. And that was when Andrew Cushman and Windows Snyder decided that it was important to build bridges between the hacker community and the developers and executives here at Microsoft. that was unprecedented. Nobody really knew what was going to happen. Invite the hackers that were breaking the very products that we worked so hard to build into Microsoft. I mean, there was a lot of suspicion on both sides, and that trust had to be built up over the years. And now hackers are fighting to get an invitation to come speak at Blue Hat, come attend Blue Hat. It's become an industry standard, and many other companies have followed suit because they realized that it was so important to get some of the cutting edge research on the outside to the people who were building our products and services on the inside. The other really important thing that comes out of Blue Hat are the hallway tracks. So the hallway track is essentially where the hand-picked external attendees, the speakers and the external attendees, mix with Microsoft developers and executives to really understand in both directions, what are some of the constraints that we have? How do our customers actually use our software? What kinds of security fixes may actually be worse in terms of impeding business function for our customers? So there's a bi-directional exchange of ideas that happens here at Blue Hat. So we've been contracting individual researchers for a long time to do targeted penetration testing of our products. Some of them we bring in very early in the process. We give them access to source to look at in addition to their black box pen testing that they do. And we really integrate some of these folks into our product building. Our team also sponsors and attends over 30 different hacker conferences worldwide. That is us going out to the watering holes, finding new people. Some of the people that I've brought to you in terms of my duties as chair of Blue Hat content, I met at conferences and watched them speak. So Josh Thomas yesterday, I met him in Iceland in September. And about a month later, I brought him one of the Nokia phones, hoping actually that he would be able to set it on fire. I wanted the very first Blue Hat talk that required a fire extinguisher. Unfortunately, he had other projects that he was working on. You know, I'll have my fingers crossed for next year. But another important place where we have developed and grown in terms of our ecosystem outreach is direct payment to the researcher community to solve hard problems. So one of the things that we did back in 2011 was we announced the Blue Hat Prize. How many of you are familiar with the Blue Hat Prize? Okay, internally I was calling it the X Prize for hackers. Pose a very hard problem, and that was develop new platform-wide defenses, and we will award you, top prize was $200,000. So it was a really interesting experiment for us because nobody had ever done a reward system for pure defense before in terms of a vendor putting out this type of large award and large competition. But we also learned that it's quite difficult for somebody who doesn't work on the platform day in and day out and understand our application compatibility issues, our backwards compatibility issues, and the way that our customers deploy our software in terms of performance, such that we couldn't really implement a lot of what we got from the Blue Hat Prize because they weren't close enough to the code. So before we go and talk about the bounty programs, which were launched earlier this year, I am going to talk about some of our strategic defensive information sharing programs. How many of you are familiar with MAP, Microsoft Active Protection Program? So this was actually launched in 2008 originally because, as I mentioned, Update Tuesday, Patch Tuesday, that was basically bad guys and good guys racing to reverse engineer our patches, find out what the underlying vulnerabilities were, and the bad guys were doing it to develop exploits. So Update Tuesday, Exploit Wednesday, or maybe Update Tuesday, Exploit Tuesday afternoon in some cases. We wanted to tip the scales in favor of the defenders. So since the bad guys were doing the reverse engineering, we decided to give a head start to some of the defenders, and that was the beginning of the MAP program. So earlier this year, we actually announced some expansions to the MAP program. So there was only one MAP where we gave detection guidance and proof of concept code and stack traces and other information that would be helpful for defensive security companies like antivirus and IDS/IPS vendors to create signatures to block these attacks. That's been renamed MAP for Security Vendors. We expanded the program to include MAP for Responders, and I'll talk about that in a minute. And we also added a pilot service called MAP Scanner. So in addition to renaming the original MAP program to MAP for Security Vendors, we've added a step where we validate the signatures that are created. One thing that we noticed in running the MAP program over the years, especially when we provided proof of concept code, was sometimes they would create a signature that only blocked the POC that we had provided them. They didn't actually utilize some of the root cause information that we gave them. And so it became important to us to help differentiate for our customers which of these signatures actually blocked root cause. So that is what the MAP validation program is about. In addition, we started MAP for security vendors, and that is where we are sharing detection guidance and with this information 3 days before Update Tuesday. That gives the good guys a chance to come up with these defenses without having that time pressure of doing the reverse engineering. So MAP for responders is a new part of the program that we launched earlier this year, and that is threat intelligence sharing. You know, we talk all about information sharing in terms of defense. This is a way for us to do it consistently and safely with the people who are responding to attacks worldwide. These are our customers, our partners, and it is impossible for us to defend the security ecosystem that we live in on the internet alone. So we know that we need to share this threat intelligence. Again, the bad guys share information. These programs are designed to give the good guys a head start. So finally, we've added MAP Scanner. And that was something that we had used internally as part of our triage process. Content-based attacks, so malicious office documents, malicious PDF files, can now be submitted via a pilot program to a tool we call MAP Scanner. And that tool essentially puts out whether or not the malicious content is actually taking advantage of a known CVE or a known vulnerability, or whether or not it may be zero day. So this is another way in which we are opening up our floodgates to understand what are the actual threats that are out there that are facing our customers, provides a conduit by which we can learn about these new attacks and learn about new zero day. The MAP programs and the bounty programs were really designed to work together. The security ecosystem strategy team, when I joined Microsoft, was actually two teams. It was two separate teams called Sec Out and Part Out. It was security community outreach and partner outreach. And the MAP side was the partner outreach side. I thought this was a strange separation considering how complementary our mission was and the fact that we serve in the MSRC to protect the customer through these various outreach programs. So we unified the team under one. I want to talk about the bounty programs with respect to the time that I have left. How many of you heard when we announced that for the first time ever, Microsoft would be paying directly for vulnerability and exploit information? Yeah, so this was something that Microsoft and a number of other companies had resisted doing for quite some time, and I'll tell you a little bit about how that came to pass, of how we changed that in favor of our customers and our engineers internally. We wanted to make sure that we weren't just offering a cookie-cutter bounty program. We've got over 800 supported product lines, and we knew that we weren't going to bounty everything at once. We were already enjoying a great relationship with the security researcher community, where over 90% of issues were reported to us directly for free, even when there are white market alternatives in the form of third-party, you know, bounty-type programs like HP's Zero Day Initiative, et cetera. So we had to take a look at what the data about what the finders were doing with their research and take a look at how that data might be changing. What trends were they actually following? So the first bounty that we announced this past summer, we announced three, was called the Mitigation Bypass Bounty. And that looks like a very big number. However, that is a white market number. That is a white market price for this type of information. We priced it out based on the going price about 3 months earlier at the Pwn2Own competition. How many of you are familiar with Pwn2Own? Happens up in Vancouver every year, and I call it an exploit art walk. You know, it's where the hackers come and they show off their best work, and they try to they compromise a fully patched system target. So we decided we were going to pay the same amount, but specifically to learn about brand new mitigation bypass techniques. We estimate that there are very, very few new mitigation bypass techniques that affect our latest platform. So this program is ongoing, And yesterday, if you were here, you noticed that I surprised the very first winner of the first $100,000 bounty on stage with a giant check. Anybody know what the bottom says there? Yell it out. There we go. Okay. So yeah, we had a lot of fun with this, but this is actually quite serious. If we don't have this ability to incent the researcher community to come to us directly, then otherwise, the only other two ways that we might learn about new mitigation bypasses that affect our latest platform are through a once-a-year contest or through a tax. So the fact of the matter was, we engineered this particular bounty program to be ongoing to provide this white market for the research community to come to us directly. The second bounty program that we announced that is also ongoing is the Blue Hat Bonus for Defense, and that's $50,000 for a defensive idea. Now, ideally, that defensive idea would accompany a brand new mitigation bypass and defend against that. So come to us with a way to break our latest mitigations and come to us with a viable way for us to defend. However, I've said this in a few different forums, but I'll say it again. We'll pay out for something that actually addresses an existing open problem in defeating our mitigations, such as return-oriented programming is one way to defeat our platform-level mitigations. And we'll pay $50,000 for a defensive solution that seems viable. The third was the only true bug bounty program, and it was for a fixed period of time, and I'll tell you why, for a very specific reason. The first 30 days of the IE11 preview period, we offered up to $11,000 per vulnerability. And the reason for that is this. We had some disclosure trends. So what you're seeing up there is real data. The gray line is during the beta period of IE10, where we had no bounty, that was the number of bulletin class issues that were submitted to Microsoft. That break in the graph is RTM, release to manufacturing. And then you see a big spike. Now, why is that? Well, I was saying that researchers come to us for free, for the most part, and they still were. The reason for this is that, as you know, we acknowledge researchers who work with us via coordinated vulnerability disclosure by offering them credit in our bulletins. If we fix the issue during the beta period, there would be no bulletin and no credit. So even that currency, such as it were, of 10-point Arial font. That currency was not offered during the beta period. In addition, the white, gray, and black markets for our vulnerabilities were not really offering money during that period. They might offer money for other people's products. You can think of some products that have very, very high uptake immediately upon release, lines around the block. Unfortunately, I do not see lines around the block for installing the latest version of IE. Therefore, there was a gap in the market. So what we did here was we projected that if we provided an incentive as early as possible after release, that we would provide, we would fill a gap in the marketplace, we would provide a white market outlet for researchers who wanted to work with us and make a little money on the side. And in fact, our theory proved correct. So we got 23 submissions during that bounty period, 18 of which were bulletin class issues. That is an incredible signal to noise. So we had other goals, strategic goals, of being able to identify researchers who had never worked with us directly before and have them come to us directly because they had previously been going to a place where they could get paid and get 10-point Arial font. So we were able to identify at least one researcher who had only ever participated or submitted issues via a white market broker before. That particular researcher submitted 6 issues that among that 18, 5 of which were critical. And he's a very nice guy. So we're building relationships, building more bridges, building new ways to empathize with the security community in this way. Another really interesting fact that happened during that period was because our engineers and our testers were fully concentrating on not building the next version of the product, but actually fixing these bugs, they were kind of doing a dynamic pen test with the outside researchers. The outside researchers would submit vulnerabilities, and that would lead us to look at certain interesting areas of code. It would also provide a necessary feedback loop back into the SDL, the security development lifecycle, such that we could improve the SDL's requirements for the next time to prevent similar types of issues coming in. So this was an incredibly dynamic period of time. One other thing that we got out of these 18 bulletin class issues, which as you can see, we paid $28,700 for. Kind of amazing. One other thing was we got four sandbox escapes. Four. From the same individual. The same guy who got $100,000 from us. So he's a very talented guy. He's around here somewhere. We are planning to send him home on the plane with that giant check. That's a requirement. I hope that they photograph it all. But really, I mean, we learned so much from this dynamic engagement just in this 30-day window. And we did traffic shape. We moved the spike. So it was beneficial to our customers because we got those issues earlier. It was beneficial to our engineers. And it was beneficial to the research community. So that is part of what we do as strategists in the Microsoft Security Response Center. So how many of you heard about the expansion to the bounty program about a month ago? Okay, well, I'm a big karaoke fan. If you follow me on Twitter, you know this. I'm constantly looking for new karaoke opportunities in various cities where I go to conferences. And I will rope in anybody who is willing to at least sit down and watch, if not sing. But I'm a big fan of Bon Jovi, Wanted Dead or Alive. So in my head, I was thinking about these programs and what would be a really interesting strategic evolution of these programs. And essentially, we came up with this notion that there are so few individual researchers worldwide who are capable of finding platform-level mitigation bypasses. There are probably only a few hundred. That is such a small number, and among that number, even fewer of them are willing or able to work with us. So when I say willing, it's whether or not they like us. And when I say able, it's whether or not they're already employed by an organization, essentially an adversary, such as organized crime, or perhaps a nation, that it is in their best interest to never let us find out about their new attack techniques. That is what I call the black market and the black operations. So what we did in terms of expanding this program was we needed to expand the pool of individuals who would qualify to give us some of these new bypass techniques. So instead of it only being open to individual researchers, we opened it up to responders and to forensics experts and to anyone who finds a brand new mitigation bypass technique in the wild. We want it dead or alive. So they can turn it in for $100,000. Now, they can't just probably turn in cookie-cutter malware that they find in the wild. It still has to work against our latest platform. So they will probably have to rewrite some proof of concept to show that it works on our latest platform. And they do have to submit a technical white paper, just like an individual researcher would, to describe the new bypass technique. So essentially, what we've done is created an incentive that's designed to shorten the window that attackers have to use something as dangerous as a brand new mitigation bypass that can bypass all of our defenses. You know, we often hear the attacker and defender game is cat and mouse. That's very disadvantageous to the mouse, right? No claws, tiny little teeth. I like to think of it as it's more like a cobra and a mongoose. And what we've done with this program was all those cobras out there, we just empowered a whole bunch of mongooses to go beating the bushes to turn them up. Now, what's interesting of what's happened in the last month since we announced this was a lot of individual researchers suddenly started turning in their work for the original scope of the bounty program. And I think that's because they're thinking, well, now there's thousands of potential bounty recipients, so we'd better hurry up if we've got an idea. And so that's been kind of a tremendous unintended outcome of announcing this portion of the bounty programs. You know, what's also funny is the lawyers wanted us to have everybody pre-register for the new expansion, right? And in order to pre-register, you have to email us and kind of get a copy of the pre-registration agreement, et cetera. And I threw this out there thinking they'll never let me have this. But they let me have DOA at Microsoft.com, right? Dead or alive, and perhaps the double entendre, dead on arrival. Yep. So we're really excited about this. This is absolutely meant to tip the scales in the in favor of the defense, in favor of the customer. And that's what we do in the MSRC. The Blue Hat bonus for defense is still running, and actually, those are now open to many more than just individuals, but it's also open to organizations with the DOA program. And the IE11 preview bug bounty, you know, has wrapped at the 30-day mark after the preview period. But we are certainly looking at other products, at other services. And part of the deal is that the product team or service team has to pay for their own bugs, literal buy-in, i.e. paid for their own. So we will be looking at some other expansions to happen probably next year at some point. We kind of have to wrap this conference for one. But overall, our security strategy, as it's evolved over the years, has taken into account not just our needs as a company, but really our customers' needs and the changing threat landscape that we are all here to monitor. You know, when I said earlier that I was terrified when I first joined Microsoft, thinking, what have I done? And some of my old Linux dev fellows had made fun of me for joining the Borg and all that. And I said, well, you know what? Microsoft is the lever by which I can move the world. You're all sitting in this vantage point. You're sitting in this exclusive conference that we pioneered here at Microsoft. You are all levers. You are all in this place to leverage your position here at Microsoft to make better decisions, better design choices, better coding choices. Sure, you follow the SDL, but when you think about designing our products and services, think about it from inception to creation to preview to release. We have a number of these different strategic areas that we try to insert important programs like the ones that I was just describing to you to tip the balance in favor of the customer. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about the program for this afternoon, which, as Chris was saying, is all about trust. I named the track Persistence of Trust. So when I look at the threats to Microsoft as a company, somebody in the executive sessions yesterday asked me, what do you think the biggest threat is in terms of threat landscape? And I said, trust is under attack. The very underpinnings of the trust that the internet is built on, the technological underpinnings, such as cryptography, are under attack. Alex Samos is going to talk a little bit later about the coming cryptopocalypse. And we're going to talk about designing crypto with the user in mind. So there will be a couple talks about that. And then rounding out at the end is my friend Morgan, who is a security and privacy expert and also a human rights advocate, and he's going to talk about what I had been calling internally the elephant in the room. It was the revelations of the past summer and the concerns about internet surveillance. Now, Microsoft is a global company. This has nothing to do with politics. This has nothing to do with any individual nation. The fact of the matter is, no matter who the adversary is, it's our job to meet them. And it's our job to design our products and services to be resistant to abuse and surveillance. So that is what this afternoon is going to be about. And hopefully, this will be a thought-provoking track for you. You'll learn a lot about what the attacks against the very trust in our products and services really look like, and what we can do from our place to stand, what we can do with our lever. For more information about the programs, please visit these links. You can follow me on Twitter to see where I am karaokeing next. And with that, I'd like to open up the floor for any questions. Mic runner, a question? There's a very far away mic runner. Oh, there's a mic runner.
Are you worried that MAP for security vendors will unintentionally tip off the bad guys as to give them a three-day head start on what's being patched?
Well, we have over 90 security vendors in the program at this point, focusing on global coverage of our customers. There is a very short window in which to take advantage of that information should any of it leak into the wrong hands. Plus, if you think about what black ops are really doing, would they do something with vulnerability information that literally every defender on the planet has to be able to defend against? That would be the noisiest attack I can ever think of. So while there is risk, the benefits way, way outshine the risk in this case. And we definitely want to make these bold moves in terms of information sharing to support the defensive side of the equation. Next question. Just one right there. All right, maybe pass the mic.
I can talk loud.
Well, yeah, the folks who are watching live streaming might not be able to hear you.
So there was a lot of focus in the bounty program on the platform on Windows and on IE. Are there any plans to expand that to our other applications, especially those in the enterprise space like Exchange and Link and SharePoint, SQL, Office, et cetera?
If you've got money and you got time, come talk to me in January. I'm a little busy right now, but yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, next question. Over here.
I'm glad to hear that a lot of researchers are turning up their research for the bounty. However, I think it begs a question, why aren't we at Microsoft finding these in the first place? According to you, do you think we need to change anything in our culture so that we can find more of these in-house rather than pay up?
So that's a great question. Bounties are not the most efficient way to find vulnerabilities. Just like pen testing is not the most efficient way to find vulnerabilities, it occurs at the end, right? But that is what the security development lifecycle is for. And as you know, we rev that internally every 6 months based on what we learn, based on advances in security science, based on our own very, very intelligent security professionals, some of which were on the outside not too long ago. So we do try to recruit some of these hackers who have been very helpful to us in spotting areas that we might have missed. But absolutely, we definitely take the most serious investments in proactive security, and that means the SDL. Internally, I had codenamed the bounty programs ad hoc pen testing. It was sort of also my way of doing OPSEC. In case anybody popped my laptop, if they saw a folder on my desktop called ad hoc pen testing, they'd just move along. Nobody would know that it was actually the bounty programs. But yes, absolutely, we're investing proactively most heavily. And that's where every company should be investing. Every vendor should be investing most heavily on their preventative software security assurance programs. Next.
Percentage.
What?
Would you put that in a percentage?
A percentage? Of investment? Probably 99.99% of our effort is done proactively. Absolutely. Yes. Go on. Next question. Yes. Mic runner. And maybe we queue up one more question while that mic is going to that person. Who's got another question after that? Who wants a mic? Okay, not yet. All right, go ahead.
Can you share with us some of the surprises that you encountered that you had not planned on during the planning phase, whether it's staffing, budgeting, flow of requests, et cetera?
Well, that's an interesting question. So as a company, and we've released this publicly before, as a company, we have a huge funnel of incoming reports. Now, they might not all turn out to be actual vulnerabilities, but we have about over 200,000 non-spam email messages a year come into Secure at Microsoft. That is the biggest funnel I've ever heard of. So in terms of dealing with volume and traffic, we were already well situated with 24/7 coverage of that Secure at mailbox to handle any kind of spikes. We got more spikes of questions than we did of submissions. A lot of the researchers really wanted to know in detail what did we mean by truly novel. We had some of the security science folks, Matt Miller, go blog about what kind of an attack technique would have qualified that was already patched, so we could actually do a deep dive dissection and answer those questions for the security, for that handful of security researchers who are capable of coming in with issues. In terms of surprises around submissions, yeah, the four sandbox escapes, that surprised us. we kind of walked around the bounty table and said, wow, we found four. Wow, the same guy, huh? Well, okay, he's in the matrix. He can see the lady in the red dress. There she is. So that was a bit of a surprise. It's not a surprise as to who, but it was a surprise as to how many. Next question. Okay, well, with no other questions, I want to thank you all for your participation in Blue Hat. Definitely fill out your consensus surveys, you Microsoft employees, and help us help you make a better Blue Hat for next time. And I really appreciate this. Thank you so much.